Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
This is Hidden Killers Year in Review. A look back at the biggest stories of 2025. This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi. And continuing coverage of the case against Rex Huerman.
Otherwise, affectionately known as the Gilgo Beach Killer or the Long Island Serial Killer, allegedly. Lots of new information coming out. More so, I think, to scratch our itch of what the hell was going on in that house, because that's what we've been speculating on since he was arrested. Of course, his house, Massapequa Park in New York, looked kind of like a hoarder's house, to put it lightly. Kind of surprising for a guy that's somewhat a skilled and respected architect in New York City to be living in such a situation. It was kind of a little bit incongruent. But we also wondered, okay, if he's doing all these things and he has this weird basement that has all sorts of weaponry in it and allegedly child porn and all sorts of horrible things, a manifesto on how to kill people. What's going on there? What's going on with the wife, Asa? They've been married for decades. What about the kids? Did they know what was going on? And the new Peacock documentary that came out that was produced by G-Unit Productions, yes, G-Unit, 50 Cent, it dives into this, and it goes into great detail. We hear Asa in her own words. We hear the daughter. We hear the son. We hear a lot of people come out and discuss what life was like with Rex. Joining me to discuss, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. There's a lot to unpack here with Rex and what was known and what was not known. I'm going to start with Asa, because Asa is one that she filed for divorce early on. They did get the divorce. But what we learn in this documentary is that it was more so to protect assets than it was to get away from the man that most of us believe is a horrific serial killer. What's your thoughts on how that all worked out and where she's sitting today, still believing that this man is innocent and he was her hero earlier in life?
Yeah, we do not want to face anything that is incongruent with our self-image, do we? Mm-hmm. She is a great example that she's been groomed in this lifestyle with him, and it's been part of her life for so long, and he's been part of it. It's part of who she is. It's part of her validation of self. And to deny any of that would be obviously bone crushing to her brain. It would break her brain, I think, to admit that he is actually potentially the killer, because she idolizes him. And what's interesting about this entire thing is that look who she's placing more important than anything else. Him, mm-hmm. above children, above everything. So it's he did a good job brainwashing her, there's no doubt.
And they had met when she was young, I believe 17, 18, somewhere around there. She had a very traumatic upbringing. She is a rape survivor. There was abuse. There was all sorts of things that she had gone through where she needed help. Either she was going to pull herself up by the bootstraps and get a life going for herself, or someone was going to come in and save her. In this case, Rex was the savior, and I say that in air quotes. Yes. Brought her in.
Oh, he came
married.
In. I don't know he if he came saved in. Her, but yeah.
He came in. I mean, to her reality, the world, the trauma that she had been living in, he took her out of that. And allegedly, he didn't cause her more trauma. And maybe he did not. Maybe, it was a fairly plain Jane relationship and there really wasn't a whole lot going on involving her and this other life that he's allegedly led. And then all these years later, it seems that when she's on vacation is when he's out doing these things. There's a lot of weirdness here. One of the things that I found odd is the normalizing of rather bizarre behavior. One of them being, when we're on family vacations, he's out doing this. Well, why isn't he on the family vacation? That's not a family vacation. It's kind of bizarre when just mom is taking the kids on all the family vacations and dad is always back home and we don't know what the hell's going on. Now, certainly the dynamics of work and all that do play a factor into this. But that seemed to be what happened all of the time. There was this separation. There was places in the house that no one was allowed to go into. And that was just completely normal. It wasn't just this is off limits. It's dad's space. He doesn't like you in there. It was like, you don't go in there. There was a lot of normalizing weird behavior in this house. Yeah. Do you believe that?
100%. So he rescued her from an unhealthy life of trauma and then renormalized her into his life of secrecy and lack of transparency. Mm-hmm. And so that became her new normal, which was better than her old normal. So it, in her mind, it's a step up. He saved her. That's why he's a hero to her. But he normalized all these unhealthy behaviors of lack of transparency. Remember, I keep saying it repeatedly. Open, honest communication, transparency, and vulnerability are the three pillars of trust that I believe we all need if we're going to have healthy relationships. And that lack of transparency, secret places, times with unknown things going on, he normalized that at a very, very young age in their relationship, so it became part of the norm. And so when they have kids, that's also then part of the norm. It's just the way mom and dad do things. It's the way our family does things. It becomes part of the little insulated family normal. So doesn't surprise me at all.
Do people like this, probably depends on the human, but someone like Rex Heuermann, who essentially groomed Asa and the family to believe one thing one way. This is how it works, and this is how we're going to do things. Are they doing that on a conscious level? Is it, I better make them think this so I can get away with that? Or is it just who they are? They have to present things this way because this is just how they operate. It's not necessarily nefarious how a healthy individual would have to sit down and go, how am I going to convince someone of this? An unhealthy individual would just naturally be able to do that because it's just, well, this is how life has always worked out for me. It's just, it's how my motor runs, if you will.
So I'm going to liken this to alcoholism, believe it or not.
Okay.
In the sense that what happens is with someone that's a deep-rooted severe alcoholic, their entire existence revolves around thinking about alcohol and how to hide that amount of drinking they're doing from everyone in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so it's not necessarily a conscious thought. It just becomes who they are of how to duck out of here, how to have a private stash here, how to have a behavior here that's hidden from over here. And so it becomes part of their entire existence about how to live a secret life within a life that's exposed to everyone. And so it's not necessarily a conscious thought. It's a habit of secrecy. It's a habit of betrayal of hiding themselves, even from themselves, but definitely from the world around them, so they can put up a false front, so they can look normal to the world around them and healthy to the world around them, as they have a subculture in their own mind that is, it's thoughtful, but at the same time, it's habit.
Mm-hmm. And that's I think a big differential between a healthy person and a very broken person.
Yes.
It's just, yeah, the prism, the operational, it's a different operating system. If we're all operating on Windows 95, which I feel like most of us still are.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Still get the blue screen of death every now and then.
Yes,
and
it's the blue screen of death. Control alt to delete. Exactly. Just unplug the thing.
Like, let's reset. You know,
and think about it, everything I just said too is, yeah, is a what? A total lack of transparency, yeah, and openness. You know, and so I always, you know, with all the behavioral skills, tools, and techniques we talk about, and I train people all the time on, they always say, well, isn't that just manipulation? I said, the greatest counter to any sort of manipulation or even influence or persuasion where there's covertness involved is just be transparent. Mm-hmm. Transparency is the greatest mitigator for unhealthy behaviors. Because if you're unwilling to be transparent with your behavior, maybe you really should second guess the behavior you're having, because that will keep it from being unhealthy. Because once you start going down the unhealthy path and becomes part of your normal, mm-hmm, it becomes easier the next time, and then easier the next time. And then you get into a pattern of unhealthy behavior, and what you're now doing is you're normalizing that behavior to that environment. You're grooming your environment to your unhealthy behavior. Mm-hmm. If you just started with transparency at the beginning, you avoid it at all. You avoid it entirely. I know. I'm pie in the sky, Robin, very optimistic, rose-colored glasses. But hey, I got reps doing this shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way it works.
No, it very much is. And Rex operated a certain way. I think one of the most shocking parts about the Rex Heerman case, the Gilgo Beach killer, Lisk, whatever you want to call it, is when we're talking about baseline of a human being, you know, a lot of it just go to ourselves. So how would I think about this? It's just kind of our natural reaction. And you got to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. We're talking about Rex Heerman and his baseline. What kind of a baseline is it for somebody who completes the documents the way that he did, the documentation in his basement, his kind of manifesto or to-do list, if you will? It went into such great detail about what he needed to do, and just weird, like, little reminders for himself. And the fact that someone is capable of writing this stuff down and then going back to life and going to work as the architect and going out to Applebee's with the family or whatever the hell he was doing. These are some of the things that were on his planning list. Get sleep before hunt. Have story set. Check issues to avoid detection. His inventory, cutting tools, acid, hair nets, tarps, heavy rope. Things to remember. Hit harder. Consider a hit to the face or a neck for takedown. Post-murder body preparation. Remove head and hands. Remove trace DNA and remove ID marks like tattoos. It goes on and on. And he's just typing this down in Word. And he had this list for like 20 years. What is going on with this human being that they can do this and go, yep, this is my to-do list. And then, like I said, go back and live normal life. That's a weird baseline of life right there.
It's actually not surprising to me, because
yep,
this is what stalkers will do as well. Mm-hmm. They actually keep detailed notes on what they're doing, because this is part of his, to me, this is part of his fantasy. It's not just how he positioned bodies. What serial killers do is they live out these fantasies. They position bodies. They keep trophies. They do certain things to live out the fantasy in their mind again. And so part of his fantasization is actually his note-taking. So he can think about this. So a lot of these bodies – if again, if he's actually the murderer, whoever did it, were positioned and put in places that he can think about them and maybe even drive by or see them, but not frequently. And so if you're trying to relive those moments and try to get that same rush that you had in those moments and thinking about those bodies and what he did to them, one way he's going to do that is be able to look at his notes and remember it and reminisce about it and think about it. And also, he's a detail-oriented guy. He's got life reps of doing this, and so he's probably perfected his craft. He wants to get better each time. You know, he's an architect, which is an engineering type of thing, and so they're detail and process-oriented people. So he's, you know, he's very likely a very process, detail-oriented individual. So he actually took a lot of notes on it. You know, I know it still hasn't gone to trial yet, but it just reminds me of the Koberger case as well. Here's a detailed school guy just taking a lot of notes, doing a lot of research and doing all these things to execute a plan. And so Huerman doing something similar like this too. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all, especially since we see he's got a household of trophies. He's a hoarder. He collects shit so he can look at it. Yeah. You know, the same thing. Why do you write things down? So you can reminisce and look at it again, improve upon it. And just, I mean, can you imagine? So again, we put our reverse context on. So here I am, I'm a psychopath and I want to kill people for a living because it makes me feel good and I get the adrenaline rush I want from it. One way I can sit around in my I love me room of guns and body parts is to look at my notes I took to do it every time. Oh, what a great time that was. See what I mean? It kind of fits that whole behavior pattern of his life of just nutso. It's my scientific nutso. Term of the day, nutso.
The very scientific word of nutso.
Hey, Robin the behaviorist. Yeah, yes, he's nutso.
It's what the hell is going through his mind when he's doing that, though? When he's sitting down in his little den and lair.
Oh, he's having a good time. Think about it. He's having a great time planning this out. He's like, oh, man. Think about it. So again, I don't think these are like spur of the moment vacations. His wife says, Asa says, hey, you know, we haven't had a vacation of mine in a while. You mind if I take the kids? He's probably saying, hey, I saved us some money. You guys really deserve a vacation. So I'm planning this whole thing out for you. A great thing. And so in his mind, he's got part of his excitement is planning a vacation for his family. Cause part of that planning process is this planning process. He's a planner. And so he's just sitting around slowly, methodically taking his notes. I plan them to get out on here. On this date, I'm going to do this. I mean, he's probably going slow and reveling in every moment of this entire planning process. And then afterwards, what is he doing afterwards? Like some people take photos on vacations. He's going back and looking at his notes. Again, a lot of conjecture, a lot of sure. You know, me, Robin, leaping way out there on this. But if we're trying to understand what could possibly be the reason why someone has behavior, makes sense, doesn't it?
That's a great question that would have been really lovely to have asked in that documentary. Who planned the vacations?
Yeah.
How did that go down? Was there a lot of planning involved? Who did it? Who paid for it? Who was going, hey, just like you said, because then his family is looking at him like, oh, he's the martyr. He's sacrificing his time. He wants us to go have fun, even though he can't because his work is so taxing. And they come back going, thank you for that vacation, Dad. I wish you could have come. My God, it would have been great if you were here. Oh, I know. I'm sorry. It's work. Gotta.
My guess is the hero planned the vacation.
Yep.
That's why, and you know, people use words with a lot of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Her using the word hero says it all. He's a hero to her because in her mind, what do heroes do? Heroes sacrifice themselves for us, for others. And so in her mind, what behavior fits that? All these things that I just described is the behaviors of a hero.
He convinced her that he was the hero all those years over and over and over. It is a weird way to describe your significant other, especially 20-some years after he rescued her or whatever. It being a hero is a weird one. I mean, it's like, I admire them. I love them. I trust them. They are a great human being. Just
what you need for someone to cover your tracks though. Too,
yes. But if you are the hero, that's a new level. That's like, you don't question the hero. And that seems to be kind of the home that they lived in. They didn't question what he was doing down there. They just, you know, he's as good of a guy.
That's the hero's lair. That's where the hero goes to a secret bat cave.
Yeah. Except he's
no kidding.
At,
I mean, just think about it. I mean, you know, it's anytime people try to make these things overcomplicated, you're really working too hard at it. This guy is a simple animal. This simple animal had his den, you know, as a predator wolf. He had his sheep around him protecting him. And to them, he's the hero.
Were you surprised by, because we see technology obviously used in a lot of cases these days. This guy seemed to be pretty good at using it and evading being captured. He didn't do a lot of the dumb things that we see in so many cases with the, I mean, we right. did find weird Google searches after the fact on his basement computer, but a lot of it, you know, it wasn't out there in the open. He used the burner phones. He, didn't take a bunch of selfies. There was a lot of things out there that he evaded with the technology that he had used. Were you surprised by that?
Yes and no. So again, he's got years and years and years of reps of doing this. So he got very skilled at his stuff. But you know what it reminds me of is that, so he created a very safe place in his house. Mm-hmm. And he had, he basically had his wife as helped him create this buffer zone that helped him stay very rudimentary and very basic as well. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that comes to my mind is believe it or not, in the spy world of tradecraft, people will always think that tradecraft is all about high speed electronics and data and thumb drives or even, now digital transfers and all these things now. But, the safest type of tradecraft to use is the same tradecraft they use for thousands of years, a fake rock with some, microfiche in it or a simple, message written on a piece of paper in a fake rock someplace or a sticker on the back of a road sign that says a dead drop's been loaded, so no electronics, no anything, and it accomplishes the same things as all these other things. So here's a guy living in his lair as Batman, the hero of his wife, doing a lot of very basic things, using things and technologies that have been used for years and years. And so, but he did try to keep pace with technology. But again, I think it outpaces his skill set.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was interesting. BTK's daughter, Carrie, was on this show, the documentary that's on Peacock right now, talking about what life was like with Dennis Rader in Park City, Kansas, just a suburb of Wichita. I was there last weekend, and in morbid wow. Dad-daughter moments, we drove by BTK's lot, or what was left of it.
We got to do a show on your daughter now.
Yeah.
She didn't live with you.
It's like, hey, we're in Wichita. What should we do? Let's go look at our old house, and then let's drive by where BTK lived, because we were actually very close to each other in that vicinity. I was not there when he was free, but right. Another funny fact, Jennifer Coffendaffer, who's on this show, also yeah. from Park City. So she grew up around the city there as well. I texted her a picture of the Park City sign when I was there, just like, look where we are. But anyway, BTK. Obviously terrorized Wichita for many, many years. And the family was completely had no idea what was going on. Right. Dennis Rader was a dog catcher, basically, for the city of Park City, worked maintenance and some other things, had been a police officer, a volunteer police officer way earlier. But again, evaded capture for all of those years. What kind of patterns do you see here that Rex employed, similar to what BTK did, to live the family man life? Nobody is the wiser for all of those years. Between the two stalking, very vicious, seemingly without conscience individuals.
So on a side of being serial killers and the psychopathy that goes behind that, and the reasons why they do it, it looks very similar, very identical. I mean, the reason why they do these things for the fantasization and all that seems exactly the same. Well, very similar anyway. What was interesting was BTK, he had things he did to quell that urge in him in the in-between times so he could live that normal life. And what I'm seeing Huerman do is something very similar in the fact that he had a professional life that he's maintained the show of. But what he did was in the in-between time, he's able to shuffle his family out. And also, we'll see when it goes to trial, they got the investigative reporter and the independent who's that lawyer that's working on behalf of some of the victims. He keeps coming out with some of his background.
Yeah. Yeah,
I can't remember.
He wears
his name
the
right
hat.
Yeah. But he's but he keeps coming out with these interesting potential sex parties, wife mm-hmm. swapping. I mean, there's a lot of weirdness that I think is going to come out in the trial. And so I think that Huerman was doing a lot of say, regular abnormal things, maybe with prostitutes and things like that, that that kind of kept him satiated in between the serial killing. And I just think BTK was doing something a little healthier. But again, that same kind of brain rush he needed to kind of give himself, I'm trying to search for the words, you know, to keep him satiated in between the killings, because they both had to do something. Otherwise, you know, they're going to be discovered. So they had to space them out. And so they're both doing different things to space out their need to kill.
Yeah. John Ray, by the way, is
John Ray. That's it. John Ray.
John Ray, the guy with the hat. And yep. And we've had him on the show before, too, talking about, you know, the things that he's brought to light.
There's some craziness in there, isn't there?
Oh, my God. He's an interesting dude. I believe there's a lot of good things he has brought to light in this case.
Yeah.
But there has been some things that were like, okay, you're going a bit. Last year, he brought out Victoria, the daughter of Rex Hermann, her artwork, right, saying, "Look, this is the work of a psychopath," or whatever the hell he said. It's like, come on. I mean, leave her alone. She's been traumatized. Yeah. And yeah, if that's your dad and this is the normal and it's a pretty dark, you know, hoarder home and this is the atmosphere, of course she's into dark things.
I thought, you know, the things that I was mostly referencing, if it continued, was kind of what he'd uncovered or thought he or claiming to uncover was him and Asa's like sex parties or whatever they're doing earlier in life, and maybe the police chief out there. So it's all that kind of stuff.
And
it's that kind of stuff is what I'm referring to as the things that I think was placating in between the killings.
And what I wonder, too, about Asa is, you know, he normalized all of this behavior so well that she still can't see it to this day.
Right.
I do wonder, and I'm not accused, I have no idea. I'm wondering, was she involved in some of the weird sexual stuff that he was into? Not killing, not murder, but was that normalized and she went along with it because, well, Rex, her hero, says, go sleep with this guy. And I'm not accusing, I don't know. I'm just saying, if they're doing wife swapping, if they're doing all this sort of stuff and the weird lifestyle that they were living, or he was living allegedly, you know, how much of that did she have to be involved with it and was kind of bamboozled into because Rex normalized it? Obviously, it would be something shameful you wouldn't want to be talking about on camera, but I do wonder. I do wonder how much of that was normalized. And I do wonder how many red flags she did see that she still is not seeing, but others, if they were standing next to her, would have said, yeah, that's weird. Considering her daughter, his daughter, is saying, yeah, he's probably the killer. And she's like, no, hero.
Yeah. You know, Ken, when you don't have a loving critic to have that optic outside of that sphere of influence he had, you don't know.
Yeah.
And again, I'll go back to, I'm using too many alcoholism references today on this one, but what someone in a full-fledged addiction with alcohol will do to hide the behavior of alcoholism, they'll actually drink beer. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll go out and they'll drink beer. They'll mix their spouse or the family members, you know, mix drinks and whatnot. And that'll be their show as they're actually secretly, you know, quadrupling that amount behind the scenes. And so the reference here being with Asa, you know, maybe we're doing these abnormal sex things. We normalize this behavior. So I'm actually kind of hiding in plain sight the fact that I'm doing the same thing back here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to kill him. I'm just going to hide that part from you.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, he's normalizing this abnormal sexual life, which is always a part of serial killers. And he's normalizing that in front of his wife, who thinks of him as a hero, who's actually, providing a lot of cover for him so that when... So he can actually do the same, but more behind the scenes that she's unaware of.
Let's end on this. To the audience out there that may be listening and may be going and saying, there's some weird stuff going on with my spouse. Now, the likelihood that you have a Rex Hermann with you is very low. So don't expect, because you're seeing some similarities here, that you have someone that's killing sex workers and decapitating them in the woods. But on a smaller scale, and maybe there are some extreme ones out there, what would you want, you know, a listener to understand, male or female? Typically in this sort of a case, it was, you know, what it was. But understanding and recognizing potentially dangerous signs in a relationship, the ones that Asa was unaware of, did not even see, for them to look out for to maybe raise a little awareness, get those spidey senses up and going, Yes, you are my hero, but this is kind of weird.
The easiest one that people will start rationalizing is a lack of transparency in an aspect of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we first meet someone and, you know, all our endorphins and dopamine is flaring up and we're feeling great and they're being, and we're totally getting engrossed in their lives and our lives are overlapping like this. And we have a lot of transparency about what we're doing and when we're texting or calling or seeing each other throughout the day and throughout the week, you know, and then when you're not and you're saying, how did your week go? Typically people will fill in the gaps and nooks and crannies of what happened when we weren't together, when we weren't communicating. So there's a lot of openness in that communication. That's a sign of a good, healthy relationship. And that when you're displaying mutual curiosity for each other and reciprocated on both ends, and then that should then continue as a relationship develops. You know, you keep finding out what's going on in each other's lives, you know about people in their lives. And so it's enriching, you know, and you're feeling fulfilled and it makes you feel good. But all of a sudden, if you start having some gaps in time that there's a, and you have a lack of transparency, or there seems to be avoidance of wanting to get in the granular details of things. Now, granted, there might be reasons for this. You know, like I worked in the world of counterintelligence. There's a lot of things I can't share with my wife because of secrets and classifications, mm-hmm. things like that. But I'm very open about the gaps of time, what's going on. I'm going to be doing this operation here. It's going to start here. It's going to start and here. I can't tell you who's necessarily involved. But in other words, I'm being as transparent as possible, then sharing about rules, process, procedures, regulations. So again, I'm offering transparency about all of these things. Very congruent with who I am. The tempo is not changing. My nonverbals aren't changing between what I'm saying and what the emotions I'm feeling towards you, towards my family, towards everything. But if you start having a lack of transparency and deviations from our behaviors with individuals, those are what people call red flags.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention, explore those red flags. And if someone's not willing to be transparent with when you feel a red flag is going up and they say, well, you're just being paranoid. Well, now they're putting it on you. They're victim blaming you. And you might be paranoid, but at the same time, there's a behavior that's causing you to feel that way. And if you need to explore yourself and your own trauma responses to things, great. But at the same time, though, pay attention to them. There's something that they might be doing that is triggering that response you're having. And normally, the first thing that happens is that lack of transparency.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Rex Huerman.
Welcome back to what might be the most chilling segment yet of our analysis with psychotherapist Siobhan Scott. What you're about to witness includes actual audio of Rex Huerman calling from jail. I need to warn you, hearing the voice of an alleged serial killer speaking to his devoted wife, it's a little unsettling. It's not that he's saying anything crazy or horrible. It's the normalcy of it that makes it unsettling. It's what Asa Elrup says about their relationship that will disturb you. Before we play that footage and go into some analyzing with psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, let me provide some context that makes these phone calls even more significant. The conversations are taking place from the Suffolk County Jail in Riverhead, where Rex Huerman has been held since July of 23. Every call from that facility is recorded. Every call is monitored. Rex knows this. Asa knows this. Yet they continue these conversations as if they're discussing what to have for dinner or any normal evening. Here's what wasn't happening in these calls. Any proclamation of innocence, any outrage at false accusations, any discussion of fighting the charges. Instead, we get mundane pleasantries in Asa's continued devotion. It's what defense attorneys call consciousness of guilt, when the absence of denial becomes more damning than any confession. Now, let me tell you something crucial about the timeline here. By the time these calls were being recorded, Asa had already visited Rex multiple times in jail. She's seen him behind glass in shackles wearing a prison jumpsuit. She's walked past protesters outside the jail, calling him a monster. She's heard the charges read in court, 7 women murdered over 3 decades. Yet she continues these calls with the same tone you'd use to check in with a traveling spouse. What's particularly revealing, and Siobhan Scott picks up on this immediately, is Asa's physical appearance by this point. The documentary shows a woman who appears to have deteriorated significantly since Rex's arrest. Her dental health, her grooming, her overall presentation, all showing signs of severe psychological distress. Yet she lights up when talking to Rex, transforms when hearing his voice. Here's something that didn't make it into our discussion but provides crucial context. Phone calls from Suffolk County Jail cost money. Lots of money. Talking about dollars per minute. With companies profiting from prisoners' contact with the outside world. Asa, who has no job, no access to bank accounts, and is battling cancer without health insurance, allegedly, is somehow finding money for the calls. She's prioritizing hearing Rex's voice over what? Her own medical care? It's hard to know. We don't know her finances. We do know what she's told us. And then there's the divorce that wasn't really a divorce. Asa filed papers 6 days after Rex's arrest, leading many to believe she was cutting ties. But as you'll hear in this segment, that was purely strategic, a financial move to protect assets from civil lawsuits by family's victims. In her mind, in her heart, she still misses Rex Huerman. Still devoted, still in love. She's waiting for her hero to come home. What Siobhan and I explore in this segment goes beyond the phone calls themselves to examining what psychologists call trauma bonding at its endpoint. This is what happens when the psychological chains become so strong that even prison bars can't break them. When the need for the abuser's approval transcends reality itself, when love becomes so distorted that it survives even the most horrific revelations, and then we hear from Victoria, Rex's daughter, whose journey from admiration to horror provides a stark contrast to her mother's continued devotion. The phrase that she uses, past tense, I looked up to him, a linguistic shift that Siobhan identifies as crucial. It's a crack in the facade, the beginning of acceptance, the start of healing. Perhaps the most disturbing is Asa's revelation about what would hurt Rex. In a moment that defies all logic, she suggests that telling him that she loved him would cause him pain. Think about that. After everything he's accused of, after all the evidence against him, she believes her love would hurt him. It's a statement so psychologically complex that even Siobhan struggles to fully unpack it. We're going to witness a family in various stages of psychological destruction, a wife who can't see the monster she married, a daughter beginning to accept the unthinkable, and at the center of it all, a man accused of unimaginable crimes who still receives devoted phone calls from the woman who shared his bed for 27 years. It's trauma, it's denial, and delusion crystallized into a few minutes of footage that will haunt you long after you've watched it. Here's a interaction where we actually hear from Rex. This is them on a phone call in the documentary.
To accept this free call, press 1. To refuse this free call, press 2. Hello.
How you doing?
The suspected serial killer, Rex Huerman, remains in jail on murder charges.
He's been held at the Suffolk County Jail in Riverhead since he was arrested.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing? I'm doing great. Now that I've got you on the phone.
Now, see, I'll give you a call and make sure you know I'm paid today.
All right. What'd you have for dinner?
Oh, just a burger and some mashed potatoes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be in LA tomorrow. I'll try to take a walk. Because I couldn't today because it was just uncoordinated. Am I still seeing you? I'm sorry.
Yes, you are.
Okay. I will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
And I will see you on Friday.
Yes.
Bye.
That was creepy.
Just really creepy.
Even her, and I don't want to like insult aesthetics or anything, but she even looked really creepy there with the teeth.
Well,
and all that.
Yeah, you know, when you're evaluating a person for psychological health, their physical appearance is something that you make note of. Mm-hmm. It's considered, you know, revealing. Are they well kept, well groomed? Do they take care? It doesn't have to mean they're beautiful, but you know, yeah. You know, do they take care of themselves? If they don't, there's meaning in that.
Yeah.
This woman, her appearance, her current appearance, it raises some red flags again about things not being quite right with her.
What does it say? I mean, what does it say? Obviously, if you know, she's going through hell, like, without a doubt, the whole family is. But I mean, what does that say? I mean, just, you know, I can relate, like when I've been in depressive states after horrible shit happens, you know, and you can too, after reading your book, where it's like, you just kind of go down to the whatever, here's clothes, I'll put them on today. Yeah. Is it a sign of a depressive state? I mean, what are we seeing in that?
It sure can be depression. It can be disorganized thinking. Mm-hmm. So somebody could be a little bit delusional or having psychotic problems. And we're a long way now from his arrest.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember the date, but yeah. You know, it's been a while. And so I would think it's her appearance at this point is so, what's the right word? She's just kind of deteriorated. Mm-hmm. It's a flag that this lady is not doing well.
And still, you sure are. You're going to see me this. Do you think even Rex is surprised at this point that Asa's still hanging out? I mean, I think once you get busted for this and there's hairs on the victims and all that, and you got the manifesto in the basement and everything else, wouldn't be a hard sell to believe that your wife might leave you. But she's still sticking around. I mean, I wonder if Rex himself is taken aback a little bit by this.
He very well could be. And, you know, when he was first arrested, and it was just, what, a month after that she filed for divorce. Mm-hmm. And I kind of applauded that at the time. I thought, well, what a healthy response. And then it turns out in the documentary, well, that was just to protect her assets.
Yeah.
That in no way does she consider him not the love of her life anymore.
Yeah. This is another interesting clip we're going to take a look at. She talks about not wanting to upset Rex. And I want you to pay attention to what she says would upset Rex Heuermann. Let's take a look at this.
Bye. I'm talking to him all the time, but he only has a certain amount of time to be able to make calls. So I can't get too comfortable talking to him about things that are going to hurt him.
What would hurt him? What are things that hurt him?
Telling him that I love him, that will hurt him. The two of us were married for 27 years. We were 100% part of each other's lives. Does everybody really believe everything they hear?
Rex Heuermann is a demon.
Charged as a serial killer.
Do you really believe everything that's being said?
This man is a sexual sadist.
He enjoyed torturing his victims.
Well, we didn't buy it.
Telling him that she loves him would hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
What do you get there?
That's an interesting one, because clearly the way she's communicating to him shows her complete, utter dedication. And so is she thinking, you know, speculating, is she thinking that this is going to just stir his longing for her or highlight the loss? You know, I'm not quite sure. She had her eyes closed for a long moment during that. So what is the story that she's trying to generate?
Telling him that she loves him would hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an unusual response.
Extremely. And yeah, like that. Why? Because you're divorced, but you're still standing by him. Would that hurt him because it brings shame to Rex? Does Rex feel, right. does Rex feel shame if someone tells them that they love him because of, and even though he's done what he's done? I don't know. It's a weird complex right there.
It's very weird. And I think whenever you get those eyes closed from her, there's something unusual going on in her thinking process that she's trying to pull something up.
Yeah.
And is it genuine? Because certainly the way she speaks to him is utter dedication.
Let me ask you this before we listen to some of the daughter stuff. What's your take on mom? Do you think she knew anything that was going on here? And this is all some sort of cognitive dissonance, or is it just literally cognitive dissonance because she really didn't know what was going on, but you know, by choice of not questioning Rex on so many things. Mm.
I think that this lady, you know, you could say she's not, I won't say she meets criteria for any specific mental illness because I don't know enough about her,
sure.
but she's not well, and she's probably never been well. There are things wrong with her. And I think when she says, I had no idea, I think she didn't. I mean, that would be my guess. She didn't have any idea. But she's so submissive and so dependent on him, and in myriad ways, including he's my friend, he's my best friend, everyone needs a friend. He was probably her only friend. And so she just is very good at not seeing what's right in front of her. That's what I call the negative hallucination, mm-hmm. Regular hallucination. You're seeing something that's not there. Well, she's not seeing things that are there. And I don't know that she has any volitional control over it. She just doesn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been life for so long. Rex Heuermann, I mean, you could say, you know, really conditioned her, but I mean, I would almost go brainwashed her to think that some yes. of these things are just normal. Cause I mean, it would yes. take, it's more than just, nah, we don't question this. Like it was really solidly normal and it's still working. Whatever mm-hmm. he conditioned her to or brainwashed mm-hmm. her to believe, mm-hmm. she's still under that control. She's still under yes. the guise of
very,
Rex.
Very much. I agree completely.
Let's take a look at what was going on with the children. These are adults now, adult children of Rex Heuermann. They're talking about the relationship, what they thought of their dad. This is the daughter talking initially about her father in the documentary.
Starting when I was in college, he got some really big jobs, and he was very busy for a couple of years. And actually, I was honestly really inspired by my dad. I looked up to him.
One, two, three. Can you smile?
That is.
I felt like, damn, I have some really big shoes to fill. Yeah.
When you think that he committed these acts while he was still seeing clients at his architecture firm, it made it even more chilling because he compartmentalized things to such a degree that he was able to outwardly conduct his life as normal in an otherwise routine way.
But his job was very demanding. And when it started to be visible that the stress was weighing on his mental health, sometimes he would come home frustrated. He needed to wind down. But he never hit any of us.
For injuries to her face, torso, breasts.
The worst he would do.
The women were bound at the head or at the chest and later at the legs.
Was he would throw a plate into the sink.
Remains of three sex workers were discovered bound and concealed in burlap sacks.
That's the worst. Listen, like, my dad was an open book, and a lot of people who knew my dad, long-term clients, people he worked with for years, it was no secret he hunted. It was no secret he had guns. He was an open book.
Is it surprising? Is it weird that the kids are describing him as an open book and the worst he did was throw a plate into the sink? Or is this common with people who are living this double life that they're able to really present completely different to those around them?
It is, yes. That compartmentalization, I think, is kind of classic serial killer stuff. You know, you look at Ted Bundy, what was he volunteering on a helpline or something? I mean, you know, people had no idea. And this ability to keep up this facade and to compartmentalize so incredibly, that is normal for a person like this. But the healthy thing I heard from her there when she was initially speaking was, I looked up to him. Mm-hmm. Not, I look up to him. And so that shows that there's a little crack in her defense mechanism that, you know, implying that she no longer looks up to him in the same way.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, as always, thank you for your insight. I need to sit with what we just witnessed here. I know you might too. That phone call, the normalcy of it. The normalcy Asa tries to inject into a conversation with a man accused of serial murder. Had potatoes today. It's almost more disturbing than if we heard someone screaming at accusations. But there's so much to unpack here that we didn't even touch on in this segment. Let's share something about those jail calls that makes them even more significant. In New York, recorded jail calls are admissible as evidence. Prosecutors listen to every word, analyzing not just what's said, but what isn't said. The fact that Rex never once proclaims his innocence in these calls, never exposes outrage at being falsely accused, never confronts Asa by insisting it's all a mistake. That silence speaks volumes, but keep in mind, they know the calls are being recorded. Defense attorneys often advise clients to avoid phone calls for their very reason, yet Rex continues to call and Asa continues to answer. The physical deterioration, Siobhan noted, in Asa is particularly telling. This isn't just someone going through a rough time. This is someone whose entire psychological framework may be crumbling while she desperately tries to hold it together. Denial issues, the unkept appearance, these are signs of severe depression and disorganization. Yet she musters the energy to visit Rex every Friday, to wait by the phone for his calls, to maintain this connection to the man accused of being one of New York's most prolific serial killers. Let's talk about what Victoria revealed about her father's compartmentalization. She describes a man who could plan murders while maintaining an architecture practice, who could bind and torture women, then come home, help with homework. The plate-throwing incident she minimizes, that's what psychologists call minimalization of abuse. Family has normalized explosive behavior to the point where violence against objects doesn't even register as concerning. And here's something chilling to consider. Victoria mentions that everyone knew Rex hunted and had guns. But hunting what? The timeline shows gaps between his alleged murders that coincide with hunting seasons. Was his passion for hunting actually in practice? Was every trip to hunt deer actually reconnaissance for hunting women? The fact that he was so open about some activities while keeping others completely secret shows a level of psychological sophistication that is terrifying. The statement that telling Rex she loves him would hurt him from Asa, it opens a psychological can of worms. Is Asa suggesting Rex feels guilt? That he knows he doesn't deserve love? Or is this about control, that expressing love when he can't physically respond maintains his psychological frustration? Whatever the answer, it reveals a relationship dynamic so twisted that normal emotional expression has become weaponized. What Siobhan identified as a negative hallucination, not seeing what's right in front of you, extends beyond Asa to the entire family system. They lived in a house with locked rooms, with a father who disappeared during family vacations, whose financial secrets and controlling behavior wreaked havoc, yet they described him as an open book. This is generational trauma in action. When dysfunction becomes so normalized that you can't even recognize it as abnormal. There's also a question of Rex's childhood bedroom being in the basement, the room where he allegedly committed some murders, was his space from boyhood. Psychological implications are staggering there. Did something happen in that room when he was young that started this trajectory? Was returning there to kill a way of reclaiming power over some childhood trauma, allegedly? We may never know, but the symbolism is hard to ignore. For you guys watching and listening, particularly those who might recognize these patterns of devotion, despite evidence of terrible behavior. Please understand, love shouldn't require you to deny reality. Dedication doesn't mean blindness. And if you find yourself making excuses for behavior that horrifies others, if you're minimizing violence, if you're accepting locked rooms and secret lives, these aren't signs of a strong relationship. They are warning signs. The contrast between Asa and Victoria shows two possible paths when faced with unthinkable truth. Victoria is beginning the painful journey of acceptance using past tense, acknowledging the possibility of her father's guilt. It's agonizing, but it's healthy. Asa remains frozen in denial, deteriorating physically and mentally, while clinging to a love that may have enabled decades of murder. As this case moves forward to trial, these phone calls will likely be played in court. Jurors will hear Rex's voice, Asa's devotion, and the hollow normalcy that they try to maintain. They'll wonder, as we do, how love can survive such horror. The answer, as Siobhan Scott helps us understand, is that sometimes what we call love is actually something entirely different. Dependency, trauma bonding, a psychological prison were more confining than any jail. If this analysis has been valuable, please hit subscribe for more deep dives into the psychology of true crime on this and many cases. We got it for you right here. Press subscribe on the podcast, wherever you are listening, or on YouTube. If you're watching us there, hit subscribe there and let us know in the comments what you think about this case. And check us out on YouTube. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap. Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.